Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Border Patrol Commander Greg Bivino and many of his agents reportedly on the way out of Chicago, but not before they stop for a tourist photo op.
Greg Bivino is a snowflake. The people of Chicago have deserved better than having CBP and Greg Bivino in this city.
Block Club Chicago captures immigration agents as they pose for a photo in front of the Bean and mock one of Chicago's Latino strongholds. Meanwhile, a teacher pulled from her daycare is released from custody, and hundreds more detainees could be too.
It isn't just a question as to whether or not people need food. They needed it long before the events of this year.
SNAP benefits are set to flow after the longest government shutdown in U.S. history comes to an end, with Democrats, including Senator Dick Durbin, breaking ranks.
I've said this from the very beginning. It's my values that I don't negotiate, right? The details we can work through.
Chicago's marathon city budget hearings wrap up with no easy solutions in sight. And the Chicago Public Schools watchdog flags out-of-control spending on travel.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Rob Hart with WBBM News Radio, Zareen Syed with Chicago Tribune, Michael Puente with WBEZ, and Colin Boyle with Block Club Chicago. Thank you all for being here. Let's get into it. Rob, so we've got reports now that Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bivino is moving on. What do we know in the way of details?
He is on his way. He's in West Virginia, I believe, on his way to Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, this does not mean that Operation Midway Blitz is over by any stretch of the imagination. The Department of Homeland Security says these enforcement operations will continue, but perhaps nowhere near as theatrically as they have been taking place in Chicago since late September. It was very much a PR operation as much as it was an immigration enforcement operation, as evidenced by the big group class photo in front of Cloudgate this week, yeah. where the people said smiled and said Little Village, yeah. Which you know, in an administration where the president got his start as a social media troll, now everything is social media trolling, and we saw that this week.
And Colin, my friend, you were the one that captured that photo down at Millennium Park. What was the scene like down there?
Yeah, so it was the morning after the big snowfall, and we got the exclusive on this, and I was already going to be out that morning anyway, chasing down weather features like any news photographer does. So I got there early morning. People are still shoveling and snow plowing around Anish Kapoor's Cloud Gate, mm-hmm. The Bean, as we know it so fondly as. And just before 7 a.m., I noticed a bunch of unmarked and window-tinted large vehicles starting to buzz around Millennium Park. And so I walked over to Monroe, and I saw the entire street between Columbus and Michigan, full end-to-end with unmarked cars with Border Patrol agents in them. So just before 7 a.m., or actually just right after 7 a.m., they all poured out in their green fatigues. Some had large guns, some had dogs with them, and in tow with them was Chief Greg Bivino. Mm-hmm. And so they all marched over to the Bean, avoiding to slip on the ice from the snow that had just fallen, and they all were kind of cracking jokes about watching out for ice, which was a little too on the nose there, given the immigration situation here in the city. And they all stood outside of the Bean, took their photos, and one agent yelled out, "Everyone say Little Village." And you heard them all say Little Village, which came less than 48 hours after a large standoff with neighbors in the Little Village neighborhood that agents had gone to time and time again to conduct immigration raids and just do a basically a caravan through there multiple times, yeah. Leading to standoffs between neighbors and Border Patrol agents.
And you had a little bit of an interaction with Bivino himself. What was that like?
Yes. Yeah, so I know that he told the Tribune last week that he likes the press, or we love the press, is what he said. And so when I asked him for an interview, similar to how the Tribune had navigated that last week, he told me that he doesn't enjoy Block Club Chicago's coverage. He calls us Chicago's Liars Club, and if you were an in-town person, you know that Liars Club is actually a punk dive bar in the heart of Lincoln Park and not a newspaper.
But no, that's a heck of a fact check right there.
I mean, I grew up right by it. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that was an interesting interaction. He kind of grilled me on our coverage and asked why we don't cover anything about the good that they do in the neighborhoods in Chicago here. And didn't get a whole lot of information out of him that would help build out a stronger story there. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it was a very terse and back-and-forth conversation, yeah.
Well, you know, Zareen, speaking of, you know, the calling out Little Village, heavy enforcement, heavy presence there. You've been reporting on the effects, you know, in neighborhoods like that. Folks staying away from community gathering spots, places like restaurants. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Little Village has been hit so hard, and restaurants specifically in Little Village, Pilsen, neighborhoods that see a predominantly immigrant community. They're dealing with a situation now where employees are fearful and nervous just to walk to work for fear of, that they might get targeted based on the color of their skin, based on the appearance that they have a low-wage job, and customers are also avoiding restaurants for those very same reasons. So it's becoming a situation for restaurants specifically where they're in financial distress right now, and I think especially immigrant communities like that are just dealing with so much, and things like this just don't help at all.
Yeah, and obviously restaurants operating on very thin margins to begin with. Well, Michael, the teacher who was pulled from a Northside daycare has been released, and a federal judge seems poised to release hundreds of others as well. But, you know, there's been some reporting that it might be a race against time, since a lot of detainees have been deported or, you know, left the country on their own.
That's right. And you got to wonder, what was this all about? I mean, they were targeting people without warrants, without due process. Much of it seems like it was a system in where they just wanted to create fear, wanted to get people, no matter, we're talking about, we hear stories about numbers, that sort of a sort of number that the immigration had to arrest people. So they weren't really, I mean, they were kind of haphazard, and they're really affecting a lot of people's livelihoods in there. So.
Yeah, and of course, there was just some reporting from the Tribune today that about 2.5% or so of folks actually were the serious criminals that we heard officials say they were going after. Rob, this week we also saw the six folks charged in that protest outside the Broadview facility plead not guilty. Were you surprised to see them hit with conspiracy charges for what they're saying is just sort of a spontaneous demonstration?
Well, I'm no attorney, so I can't really tell you if the charge was warranted or not, but it speaks to a larger issue, which is just the fog of confusion that existed not only around some of the protests that existed outside the Broadview facility, but also when you saw Immigration and Customs Enforcement go into the neighborhoods where the tear gas is out, and who started what and why. And the real issue here for the six, including a candidate for Congress, was they were accused of boxing in a government vehicle and allegedly vandalizing that government vehicle. And the people who were accused and charged, they said that, no, they tried to run us over. Right. So it's once again speaks to the fog of confusion that exists around of just a lot of the events that have taken place over the past 2 months.
Yeah, and certainly some of the aggressive tactics that agents have used, including with their vehicles at their disposal. Well, you know, Colin, the governor and the mayor have been hitting back against President Trump, who's claimed that Midway Blitz led to a drop in crime, which, of course, it was on its way down anyway. He name-checked the failing Miracle Mile. He means the Magnificent Mile. But Block Club reported, you know, Michigan Avenue downtown actually on the upswing.
Yeah, that's something my colleague Melody Mercado has been reporting on for years. I remember working on a story with her literally 2 years ago about how Mag Mile is having this big comeback. And I grew up here in the city. I remember Mag Mile and all of its glamour and its glitz. But that was before, you know, online sales and online shops and
COVID-19.
Yeah, and then, of course, COVID-19. But it has had this really interesting resurgence where you're seeing new concepts coming to Mag Mile that you never would have thought about before. And it, you know, vacancies are on the downside. And it's sure maybe having its own miracle in a way of coming back to life post COVID. But no, and the thing too about going back to the claims about crime coming down, that's something that the mayor, if I remember correctly, he was on a big media tour about mm-hmm. that at the end of the summer, saying we're having the most peaceful year since 1965, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So this has been in effect for way longer than Midway Blitz.
Yeah. Yeah. Miracle Mile, I think the president was just remembering Billy Joel lyrics, but that's, I could be wrong.
Well, I mean, on the subject of Magnificent Mile vacancies, I mean, this is something that we have covered extensively on the Noon Business Hour, and Yeah, Colin brings up a good point. Remember back in the heyday of the Mag Mile in the 90s, you know, Nike Town, the Sony store, the Disney store, that was an event to go shopping. Water Tower Place, the anchor store, was Marshall Field's. And that is an era that is gone. And as Colin points out, it's experiences now. It's the Harry Potter experience. It's the Friends experience. It's the world's largest Starbucks. It's the big magic show coming to where Lowry's used to be. I mean, it's going to be a theme park, not so much as a shopping district.
Yeah, so it sort of follows what people like, you know, to do, though, to have these sort of experiences and go and take a picture. And if it's bringing in, you know, tax revenue, if it's bringing in business, you know, it's not necessarily the worst thing, even if it is just sort of an Instagram plant, probably. Well, you know, Michael, the country just commemorated Veterans Day this week. You covered a rally where some vets made clear they were not happy with this administration's direction. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. There was about anywhere from 200 to 300 veterans holding a rally at the Vietnam War Memorial in downtown Chicago right after the Chicago River. They were speaking out about ICE and Border Patrol, but they were also talking about these deep cuts with the Veteran Administration. And we know earlier this year, there were plans to scale back up to or let go of 80,000 employees. That was whittled down to 30,000. Now the VA is saying, well, that's not gonna hamper services to veterans, but some of the people who were speaking there, they said otherwise. They're worrying about just care for veterans at the VA centers. And so they let their voices known that they're very concerned about reduced health care benefits and everything for veterans.
And of course, the VA is an agency that's faced staffing shortages and budget cuts for years and years, so it's not necessarily a new concern. You know, there was also the remarkable step this week, seeing the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops coming out against mass deportations, including Chicago's own Cardinal Supich. Were you surprised to see them come out so strongly?
I'm not surprised. I'm a little surprised that it came out a little bit, like, kind of too long in this fight. And you got to consider a number of Latinos who are being targeted by ICE are Catholics themselves. So it's having an impact on attendance at churches. If you can't get those people into the pews, then donations go down and everything like that. So this is their main constituency, Latinos, for the Catholic Church. And so I'm not surprised that they came out this strong. I am a little surprised that it took this long.
Yeah, well, sometimes an institution with that many folks can take a while to get them moving in the same direction. All right, well, after the longest shutdown in the nation's history, the federal government reopened this week. Rob, were you surprised to see Senator Dick Durbin as one of the Democrats who voted to reopen without anything more than sort of a handshake deal on these health care subsidies?
Not really, because, one, Senator Durbin is retiring at the end of his term, and also the off-year elections in New Jersey and Virginia and California and elsewhere probably changed the math when it came to the political considerations behind prolonging the shutdown. The numerous polls have suggested, as the shutdown got longer, that the Trump administration was bearing the brunt of the responsibility, and congressional leadership was bearing the brunt of the responsibility. So essentially, Democrats made their point. That is what the Dick Durbin line of thinking is. Democrats made their point. The voters in Virginia and New Jersey voted on a number of issues, one of which was the shutdown a week ago on Tuesday. And you drag this out any longer, people get hurt. People are going without their SNAP benefits. You could see chaos at the airports on Thanksgiving because air traffic controllers, they already missed two paychecks. And some were turning to Uber, some were deciding to retire. And if that went on longer, then both sides get bear the brunt of the blame on this. So as far as Durbin and the other seven Democrats, they saw an opportunity to declare victory and move on.
And I know predictions are a dangerous game, but if you look into your crystal ball, do you think we are going to see a vote to preserve these health care subsidies? Because you talk about folks worrying on their SNAP benefits. There's also the concern that people are going to be paying massive health care bills with these evaporate.
Well, when, once again, look at the election last Tuesday. New York, Virginia, New Jersey. Everyone voting on affordability. The affordability issue swept Donald Trump in a year ago because people were upset about inflation. Prices have not gone down. And if the price of your health care continues to rise, that's another potent political issue.
Well, you know, Zareen, part of the fallout from this long shutdown with, you know, the issue of food insecurity, federal workers not getting paid, people not getting their SNAP benefits. Tell us about what some local restaurants have been doing to try to fill in the gaps there.
Yeah, so there is a number of local restaurants, more than a dozen, that have been offering free meals to SNAP beneficiaries that hadn't seen a balance show up in their on their SNAP EBT debit card. A lot of restaurants had sort of a targeted approach where it was like through November 16th, some through November 20th, because that's when the Illinois Department of Human Services had said that all residents, all SNAP participants will have their full benefits restored. Some restaurants are saying, let's just go all the way to the end of the month just because of the delays, because some people had only received partial payments, that that's a safety net that's definitely needed right now in these times.
Yeah, there was sort of a range of things in there. I mean, in terms of how much they got paid out, when you talked with these restaurant owners, I mean, we were just, you know, as I mentioned earlier, very, very slim margins. Yeah. What was it that motivated these folks to try to take action here?
I think above all, it's just community, and it is the hospitality industry, and I think they're showing up as they have done time and time again. We saw this during COVID-19 and how they banded together and the support of the community and helping them being fed. And what I've heard from a lot of restaurant owners is that a lot of the costs for the free meals were out of their own pockets. Mm. They didn't necessarily have a budget built out for people that didn't have SNAP benefits for that month or that week. And a lot of customers also were just so generous and had been asking, can we donate money so that you could extend these free meals beyond just the dates that were previously planned? So it's just a combination of just people feeling helpless, I think, because of so much that's going on and trying to do what they can that's in their power.
Yeah, well, I mean, Colin, as Zareen mentioned, state says SNAP recipients should get their full benefits by November 20th. It's funded through next September. But you have to imagine a lot of folks are pretty anxious about those benefits lapsing again.
I mean, with this administration, I think the word anxious and anxiety is kind of throughout. I mean, you don't know. You can't really rely on this all coming in the next month. So to see Chicagoans really show up, like Zareen was saying, just like in COVID, just like in the same way that people were going around biking to vendors and buying out their food, it's something about the Chicago community coming through in a moment of anxiety, in a moment of uncertainty that is uniquely to uniquely fit to this city.
You're right. Chicago is great. Thank you. Sorry.
Hey, I'm with you. Very controversial take.
Yeah, hot take on this show.
Nuclear take on the weekend.
How dare I?
We knew you'd do something spicy. speaking of part of the fun of the city of Chicago, Rob, the two-week slog of budget hearings has come to an end. Does it sound like Alder people are anywhere close to a deal on this budget?
The hearings will continue until the slog's improved. I think that's the motto today. It was a year ago on this program, on a night just like tonight, we were talking about the last budget impasse and the possibility it may very well go up to the December 31st deadline, if not longer. They still have to close that $1.19 billion budget deficit. And right now, a lot of the proposals appear dead on arrival. The head tax, which was originally proposed $21 per employee above 100 employees, revised to 200 employees, that seems to be landing with a thud at City Council. A lot of aldermen are wondering if we're going to start asking to raise revenue, raising taxes here, there, and everywhere. Why aren't we doing more to address the recommendations in the Ernst & Young report and make more cuts before asking to raise more money? So 2 weeks of hearings have not really produced a result as of yet, so it's back to the old drawing board.
Yeah, you have to imagine the mayor and his team are eager to avoid the kind of fight that we were talking about last year where, you know, our friends who cover City Hall day in and day out were wondering, are we going to have to cancel, you know, our Christmas and Hanukkah plans?
I remember that very well.
Yeah, so you would imagine there's going to be some scrambling in the coming days to get something done, but I don't know if there's a clear path forward necessarily.
Not really. You know, it's never over until it's over. It's like the government shutdown, which seemed like something that could easily drag on for months. And then all of a sudden, an agreement comes together and people vote on it, and then it's in the past.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, talking about that report from the consultants with these big cost savings, you know, Michael, we heard some from the mayor's budget team saying, well, there aren't necessarily any quick fixes, but we can make all these structural changes and we're going to get these cost savings, you know, years and years down the road. But if you're an older person talking to an angry constituent or business owner, isn't that kind of a tough message to sell?
Of course it is. But they got to pick their poison. Either you're going to cut services, which we know residents of Chicago do not like, or raise those taxes, or maybe get, creative in which taxes you raise. Mm. But either way, they're going to have to figure out, like Rob was saying, $1.1 billion shortfall. How are they going to get there? It's tough. But, it's kind of refreshing to actually talk about news and these budget fights than ICE, than raids.
Yeah.
I got to say, from my perspective, it's a little refreshing.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because it's not exactly the budget days of, say, a Mayor Daley or a Mayor Emanuel, where you were told this is what you'll be voting on, whether you like it or not. There's actual negotiations going on.
And it feels better than where we were a year ago, where we literally did not know if we were going to be going into Christmas.
Right? Yeah.
So I feel, having spent so many days at City Hall, even just as a photographer, I felt a little bit better being there today than where I was a year ago, where meetings were cut off abruptly due to uproar and confusion.
All right, we're rooting for you. The holidays don't get upended. All right, Zareen, we got a report this week from the CPS Inspector General on some, shall we say, questionable travel expenses. Tell us about that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I think it was such a striking report that came out this week. So the Office of the Inspector General of CPS investigated high amounts of spending by CPS employees and staff. And the investigation started after a complaint that an elementary school had spent $20,000 on a trip to Egypt using a travel agency. And so that's where it started. And CPS had not approved that specific plan or that travel agency. So once they found out about that, they canceled that trip. But the investigation led to a number of different findings. So the OIG later found that 8 CPS schools had spent more than $142,000 in district funds on trips to Egypt, Finland, Estonia, South Africa for professional development and school visits. And the report does note that some trips did have a professional development value to them, for sure. They were. But there were a lot of other outstanding, like unscheduled activities that were happening, like hot air balloon rides and wildlife safaris. One finding that was also very striking was, there's a professional development seminar that happens in Las Vegas, and between the years 2022 and 2024, it was like 600 CPS employees had flocked to this seminar.
Wow.
And when that same conference was held in Chicago or virtually, it was like a handful of employees that participated.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
So it's findings like that, and I think it's even more shocking is because CPS is currently going through a bit of a budget crisis, and just this summer they laid off hundreds of support staff, whether it's custodians, cafeteria workers, crossing guards, essential support staff that is helping students in their day-to-day, and that was to close a $734 million deficit in the budget. So if you're a taxpayer in the district, it is definitely a head-scratcher to see this report come out.
Yeah, and Michael, you were just mentioning some of the reporting you've done on CPS, staffers, and they're saying they can't get by on what they earn.
That's right. You had a lunchroom employees having a protest outside of CPS headquarters downtown just like a week ago, saying that they want a livable wage. Some of them are making $15, $16 an hour. That's not enough. But when you see this report about people going on these lavish trips with the idea that it's going to benefit education, is it really?
Yeah.
I mean, they should go back to wonder, is this going to benefit the students in my classroom? And chances are, probably not. But they could trip.
Yeah.
Hot air balloon. Yeah. Don't go to Finland. Just wait for the Northern Lights to come to you.
There you go. They're going to be here anyway.
We saw it this week.
All right, about 30 seconds left. But Zareen, we heard the mayor saying that the CPS CEO search that we thought was coming to an end, maybe not so much. Were you surprised by Johnson's comments?
I don't think there was a lot of surprise in the newsroom. I think he's sort of taking the approach of not committed to any certain candidate. And he basically said this Monday that the job application is wide open, so people are still applying, candidates are still being fielded, so I don't think we should expect there to be a name or a profile for the next CEO of CPS anytime soon.
Although certainly a lot of folks are eager to see somebody in that full-time job there. All right, well, we didn't have to do a big search to find the four of you. We knew you were all great, but unfortunately we are out of time, so our thanks to Rob Hart, Zareen Syed, Michael Puente, and Colin Boyle.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, well, we were talking about some of the local business impacts. Mike, you just had a piece about some local groups kind of banding together to say, hey, please buy local, stay away from the
right.
Detail.
It's an effort called Chicago Loves Local. It's to get people into the communities, into the neighborhoods to you know, shop at those mom-and-pop stores and support them during this. It's a really tough time, budgetary times with tariffs on there. To support these local businesses.
Yeah, and especially going into the holiday season, kind of nice to see that message. Rather than have everything shipped to your house, you can actually go walk around a neighborhood and check some of that stuff out.
So ditch the big box stores and whatever online stuff and head to your down the block, buy there.
Yeah, there's always something there for you.
Absolutely.
And this is groups from all across the city, right?
That's right. It's spearheaded by groups in Andersonville.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that gives back to its community in Chicago and beyond.